Hi, I'm Doug Gordon. Welcome back to Beta on Wisconsin Public Radio. As far back as Andrew Ray can remember, he's always been passionate about two things, food and film. He combined those two interests to create the hit YouTube series Binging with Babish, which boasts over 5 million subscribers. One of the reasons that Andrew's channel is so popular is that he recreates recipes from movies and TV. For example, the babka from Seinfeld, or Bubba's shrimp gumbo from Forrest Gump, or even the fictitious Krabby Patty from SpongeBob SquarePants. Ray has compiled his favorite recipes into a companion cookbook, also called, yeah, you guessed it, Binging with Babish. Now, combining a foodie audience with a pop culture horde seems like a can't-miss concept. But was that strategy baked in from the start?
I really wish I could say it was a strategy, because if it was, it would be genius. Because I didn't realize that it would create a formula that consistently gets new audience members every time, because it keeps attacking niche subjects and media. Mm-hmm. So it just consistently and linearly grows my audience, which is amazing. But just like the channel itself, it was a very happy accident. I just love movies and television. I'm a TV and film junkie. I went to film school. It's always been my shared passion with food. And it also took me 15 years to put those two together. I was, you know, burning chicken breasts and cookies back in middle school, and I was making home movies to get out of writing essays in middle school. I was doing those things at the same time. Yeah. I didn't put the two together for, you know, solid 15, 20 years.
Yeah.
And it was very much by accident. I was, you know, I was trying to figure out, you know, what's my cooking show? What kind of thing am I going to cook? It was just going to be a one-off, just a single project. And Parks and Recreation happened to be on in the background. I have TV on the background all the time, just my favorite shows, rewatching them over and over, particularly Frasier. Mm-hmm. I've seen every episode of Frasier. I've seen no fewer than 7 times.
Yeah, you hear the tossed salad and scrambled eggs calling all the time.
Oh, big time.
Yeah.
So, you know, Parks and Rec was on in the background, and there was a burger cook-off between Ron Swanson and Chris Traeger.
Mm-hmm.
And Chris's burger was this kind of melange of foodie buzzwords.
I humbly place before you my East Meets West patented Traeger turkey burger, an Asian fusion burger made with Willow Farms organic turkey, a toasted Taleggio cheese crisp, papaya chutney, black truffle aioli, and microgreens on a gluten-free brioche bun.
And, you know, I was like, what would that actually taste like? Were the writers just having fun with foodie buzzwords, or would that actually taste good? And then I realized, okay, you know, maybe this is something that I can try making for this little project. And so just like every other aspect of the channel, it was a very happy accident.
Sure. But did it taste good?
Tasted amazing. It was easily the best turkey burger I've ever had. But being totally honest here, it just wasn't as good as beef. I then made Ron Swanson's burger, which was a simple, like just salt, pepper, hamburger on a bun. And beef just tastes better than turkey, no matter how you dress it up.
Turkey can never beat cow, Chris. Sorry.
So which would you say is your bigger passion, cooking or film?
I think film, honestly. I love cooking, but back in high school, one of my favorite professors had us read a philosophical book about the concept of flow.
Yeah.
And it's a philosophy I try to live my life by. It's the idea that when you're doing the thing that you're really truly meant for and the thing that you actually derive happiness from, you enter a flow state where
yes.
nothing else exists and you are in your own bubble. And professional musicians and rock climbers and athletes, they all describe a similar thing. But so do factory workers and, you know, people who have just found fulfillment in whatever they're doing in their daily life. And when I'm editing, I enter a flow state. When I'm cooking, I'm kind of stressed out because I'm not as good at it. I'm pretty good at editing. I'll say that confidently. It's my happy place.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. So what about the name? Where does the name Binging with Babish come from?
See, that's proof of the channel's accidental success, is that I named my Reddit handle arbitrarily as a joke after a minor character, an ancillary character from The West Wing, from 8 episodes of The West Wing, portrayed by Oliver Platt, same as Oliver Babish.
I need a dictaphone.
You've got one on your desk.
Doesn't work.
What's wrong with it?
Doesn't work.
He's asking.
It's stuck on record. It won't stop recording things, so it's just what you want lying around the White House counsel's office, because there's never been a problem with that before.
I'm putting mine in your bag.
And I thought that was funny, so I named my Reddit handle that. And then I was, again, just intending to just make the show once. I was intending to make it for Reddit, for the food subreddit, which is, for those who don't know what that is, it's a place where people can get together and post their pictures of the things that they cooked and discuss it. And I wanted to make a video. I wanted to make a moving picture that I could post there. So I made the show. And I didn't know what to call it, so I just, you know, said, you know, binging with Babish. You know, I'm Oliver Babish on the subreddit, so I'll be binging with Babish. And now that not very good and very specific niche joke is my entire brand and identity and what most people think my actual last name is. So
I'll
give you that.
Yeah. Let's talk a bit about the style of Binging with Babish. You have a very slick production that's easy to follow, even though it's condensed and paced for a YouTube audience, but you hardly ever show your face. How did you settle on this aesthetic?
I decided to not show my face very early on, you know, the first episode. The show's changed very little since the first episode. Mm-hmm. And the only reason I decided not to show my face, at least initially, was because I was seeing a trend on YouTube of cooking shows becoming more vlogs than cooking shows. And so I wanted to make something that was strictly and emphatically focused on the food. Mm-hmm. That's why I don't show my face. That's why I wear a black apron so the food pops and so steam pops. And that's why I wanted it to be thoroughly focused on the food. I only started bringing myself into the show, my face and my presence as a person once I was sure that people wanted it.
Yeah. You also use voiceover in every episode, and you're not afraid to poke fun at yourself inside these voiceovers, even though you could simply edit it all away. Why did you decide to take this irreverent approach?
One of the best parts about the advent of YouTube cooking videos, or at least some of them, mine included, is that we're not afraid to show our mistakes, and we're not afraid to show that it gets messy and that things don't go always go correctly.
Pepper.
Then we're going to lid this up and just pulse it a few times until, oh, would it probably help if we plugged it in, right? And yeah, we're just pulsing this a few times. Oh, what's going on here? Is there something wrong with me? No, my food processor's busted, so let's get out this little hand blender thing. This is going to do just as wonderful a job.
It not only makes for better instruction, better technique, because we can show the pitfalls of this recipe and, you know, where you could potentially go wrong and here's how to avoid it, but it also shows that it's okay to make mistakes and it's okay to mess up in the kitchen. Traditional cooking shows are wonderful, but they typically are beautiful people in a beautiful kitchen making beautiful food on their first try and making it look like it's just the easiest thing in the world. And that's wonderful, and I like that. I enjoy watching that, but I think that it's more effective and more empowering to the viewer to see that, you know, the host is just like them. We are very capable and frequently make gross errors in what we're doing. So I think that it's empowering to be irreverent and self-deprecating in the kitchen.
5 cups chopped porcini mushrooms, 1/2 cup of olive oil, 3 pounds celery.
That is my recipe for wild mushroom.
Yeah, that's right. I got them all. Cold cucumber, corn and crab chowder, mulligatawny.
Mulligatawny?
You're through, soup Nazi. Back it up. No more soup for you.
You did a whole series of episodes about food from the hit sitcom Seinfeld. As you may or may not know, we here at Beta are huge fans of Seinfeld, but it's not a show that immediately screams foodie. Yet the more you think about it, the more you realize that, hey, yeah, food does play a big role on the show. There's the black and white cookie, the soup Nazi, the marble rye, the calzones, the muffin tops, and the big salads. So Seinfeld actually gave you a wealth of material to riff off of, didn't it?
Big time. I'm sorry I keep saying big time. I'm going to stop
saying that. No, it's fine. It's fine. Makes me think of the Peter Gabriel song, Big Time. Maybe we'll put a little bit of Peter Gabriel, Big Time.
All right, well, Big Time.
Big Time, yeah, no, Peter Gabriel.
yeah, no, Seinfeld. Food is absolutely a character in Seinfeld. I mean, the most famous episode, Soup Nazi, like that's a character in and of itself. It's something that's ubiquitous in our culture. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's a show about nothing that takes place in New York City. There's going to be food happening. always. And I'm hard pressed to think of episodes that feature none at all. Half the time they're in that diner and they're at least talking about it, or they're at least eating it in the background.
Yeah.
And then, there's antique wedding cakes. There's, tricking somebody who keeps a kosher diet into eating lobster. There's tons of examples of food in Seinfeld. Yeah, they definitely gave me a lot to work with, and there's a lot more to explore. And come to think of it, I got to do those lobster eggs. This sounds delicious to me. I want to do some soft scrambled eggs with lobster in them.
Yeah, that would be great. Yeah. A few of the recipes in your book are from the film Chef, which was directed by Jon Favreau. And Jon wrote the foreword to your book. He called Binging with Babish obsessive. How did you connect with Jon?
So I have his kids to thank for getting him into my show, because most of the people watching YouTube are under 30, mm-hmm. I would say. I don't know. I don't have stats in front of me, but that seems to be the case. And his kids like forced him to watch it, and then he started watching it. And next thing I know, he's tweeting congratulations when I hit 1 million subscribers. And that was one of the most exciting moments of my life.
Yeah.
Turned out to be only the first of many with him, happily. And after, you know, just knowing that he was aware of the show and knowing that he enjoyed it and enjoyed when I did stuff from his movies, his people said, you know, we're making this show called Chef Show. We'd love for Andrew to come out to L.A. and be on Chef Show. And likewise, John will come on Binging with Babish.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, have now have this incredible connection with this Hollywood megastar, who I never could have imagined I would have the opportunity to even be in the same room as, much less have him write a stunning and touching foreword to my book. So that was a superlative and incredible experience. He ended up giving me the carving fork that he used in the movie Chef to make pasta for Scarlett Johansson, because I have a tattoo of it. So
I wanted to ask you about that. Yeah, this is from one of the recipes, pasta aglio olio. Yeah, see, I can't do that. I've got this darn Scottish Canadian accent.
I had to practice that a lot, don't worry.
Yeah, obviously I have not practiced it enough. But anyway, tell us about the tattoo.
So I got that tattoo because that episode was particularly important to me. Is because it's the first episode where I realized I would do anything for the show. Because of the evening that I had the idea to make it, again, I'm very impatient. I'm very impulsive. So I had the idea to make it, and I was like, I'm going home. I'm making it tonight. I had the idea at 6, and I was shooting by 8. So yeah, it was like 6 o'clock, and I was leaving work, and the only kitchen supply place that was open that had carving forks was a place called Whisk in Union Square. And I walked down there, and the only carving fork they had was $50. And at the time, I am broker than broke. I am like, you know, $30,000-$40,000 in debt.
Yikes.
And I still bought it because I was like, I'm doing this right.
Nice.
I have to serve it up with a carving fork. And mm-hmm. that was the moment when I realized, you know, I'll do anything for this show. I want to do it right.
Here's a gift for you.
No way. Are you kidding me?
Fork from the movie.
I'm getting chips. That's so amazing.
Well, it's not often that somebody gets a tattoo of something.
That's incredible.
Girl, let me take a picture so I can buy a replacement for the next guy who comes here. I'll tell him it's the fork, too.
This is the sixth one.
You've also recreated a lot of fictional food from cartoons and video games. How do you go about doing that?
Well, I mean, happily, those foods are based on foods in real life, so I can make real life approximations mm-hmm. of them. They're also the things that get the most views. My top 3 or 4 most viewed videos are all from cartoons. And I think that's because it's especially exciting. It's exciting to see a piece of your favorite fiction manifested in real life, but it's especially exciting to see a cartoon piece of fiction manifested in real life because, you know, it's much more fantastical. But, you know, Ratatouille from the movie Ratatouille is a real dish called confit bialdi that was developed by Thomas Keller, was the culinary consultant on that movie. So he designed that recipe. Szechuan sauce, which set the internet on fire for anybody who's not aware of it, 2 years ago when a cartoon called Rick and Morty featured it heavily in their surprise season premiere.
Welcome to McDonald's. Can I take your order?
Yeah, I'd like to get a 10-piece McNugget and a bunch of the Szechuan sauce, like as much as you're allowed to give me. In 1998, they had this promotion for the Disney film Mulan, where they they created a new sauce for the McNuggets called Szechuan sauce, and it's delicious. And then they got rid of it, and now it's gone. This is the only place we're going to be able to try it is in my memory.
Rick, you're
and
doing this bit
was such a craze that it actually prompted McDonald's to reintroduce Szechuan dipping sauce. They touted it as like the best stuff in the world on the cartoon, but it's not very good.
Mm.
And those are not only my most popular episodes, they're also the episodes that gave my show the boost that it needed to really become part of the, at least the internet mainstream, and allowed me to start making an income and make it my full-time job. Mm-hmm. So I owe the show's success to the food from cartoons.
Interesting, yeah. At Beta, we all have our favorite cooking scenes. Our technical director loves the closing omelet scene from Big Night. Our executive producer slash showrunner loves the jailhouse feast sequence from Goodfellas. What's your favorite cooking scene in pop culture?
Oh my God, that's tough, because I do love that omelet scene from the end of Big Night because it's symbolic of the healing and connecting power of food. It's it's these two brothers that just had a drunken falling out, and they wordlessly make breakfast for each other.
Yeah.
They know that they're going to lose their restaurant. They've lost their relationships. They've lost everything, really. And they've also fought with each other physically and had a huge falling out. And just without saying a word, they silently make breakfast for each other and heal a little bit. And that's the power food can have. So I think that that is definitely in my top three. But my first book, I think I ranked the top food scenes from all time. So I need to stay true to that. And I still think that this is as important. And it's from the movie Chef, where Carl Casper, John Favreau's character, confronts his son when his son tries to serve a burned Cubano sandwich.
Mm.
And he tells him,
"Everything that's good that's happened to me in my life came because of that. I might not do everything great in my life. Okay, I'm not perfect. I'm not the best husband. And I'm sorry if I wasn't the best father. But I'm good at this. And I want to share this with you. I want to teach you what I learned. I get to touch people's lives with what I do. And it keeps me going, and I love it. And I think if you give it a shot, you might love it too. Now, should we have served that sandwich?"
"No, chef."
"That's my son. Get back in there. We got some hungry people. He's ready to cook."
There's a lot of movies about food, but very few of movies care about them as much as Big Night and Chef. Those two movies really care about food and really want to share it with you, the audience, the same way, and make you feel the same way about it that the characters do.
Yeah.
And make you understand its importance. So that for me is still number one. There isn't even specifically food in that scene. There's a burned sandwich, but it's more about the power of food.
Yeah. Very well said. Yeah. Andrew Ray, thank you for doing Beta with Babish.
I see what you did there. That's good. Thank you so much for having me. It's a lot of fun.
Andrew Ray is the guy behind the hit YouTube series Binging with Babish. His book is called Binging with Babish, 100 Recipes Recreated from Your Favorite Movies and TV Shows. Learn more about what Andrew's cooking up at WPR.org/beta.
I see the crime novel as a particularly good vehicle in writing about certain issues as long as one doesn't become polemical about them.
Crime novelist Laura Lippman talks about her book Lady in the Lake. That's coming up on Beta on Wisconsin Public Radio.